Thanks for joining us on a Thursday afternoon edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw, going solo today, and we are talking a close Knicks loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers that, depending on your perspective, was either gut-wrenching or a slight positive in a season where you want to look for as many as possible. And the bigger news is that they've agreed to terms with Alonzo Trier. We're getting to that next on the Locked On Knicks podcast.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, one covering the Brooklyn Nets, I am back to covering the team of my choice and the team in my heart, the New York Knicks. The Knicks did not have a great game last night. It was a 113-106 defeat at the hands of the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I want to start with Alonzo Trier because I think this is the bigger story. It was announced this morning, I think first reported by our guy Shams, that the Knicks used their biannual exception to sign Alonzo Trier to a 2-year, $7 million deal. And that deal, I think, is pretty advantageous to both parties for Trier, a guy who goes undrafted, performs, I would say, well beyond expectations. He's making a ton of money now. He's getting paid like a top 10 draft pick. I think the stat was out there this morning that when it's all said and done, Kevin Knox will only end up making $300,000 more than Alonzo Trier this season. So that's good for him. He gets a little bit of security in that two-year deal, but not an overwhelming amount because the Knicks do have that team option for the second season, and in a sense, this was Trier betting on himself, saying, I'm going to get some money this way, and simultaneously, I think I'm going to play well enough to ensure the Knicks want to bring me back for a second year at about $3.6 million for the 2019-20 season. And if you're the Knicks now, you're covered. That's the beauty of this. You have that insurance policy that if Alonzo Trier falls off a cliff, you can cut ties after this year and say, all right, that didn't work out. We are going to move on. I don't think that's going to happen. I think some of his efficiency numbers might go down. I mean, right now, 47, 39, 82 splits, which over a larger sample size would make him one of the more efficient scorers from the guard position in all of basketball. But even if those go down a little bit, I think given the upward trajectory, you can project towards him some of the scoring instincts, the improved shooting ability relative to what he showed at Arizona. I think he is going to be a guy that they end up keeping, and they use their early bird rights to extend. And now, if you don't know what early bird rights are, and I got to be honest, it was one of those terms that I always had a vague understanding of, so I did some research, and now I know exactly what it is, and I imagine some of you listening don't know what it is either, so I'm going to explain it quickly. Essentially, it's an exception that allows the Knicks to exceed the salary cap to re-sign their own free agent for either 175% of his current salary, so at about $3.5 million a year. That would look like, and I promise I'm doing this off the top of my head, right around a little under $6 million, I think, or right around $6 million a season, or 105% of the NBA average. Right now, the NBA average salary is $7.5 million. In two seasons, when Trier is a free agent, that is obviously going to go up. So you're looking at maybe $9-10 million to re-sign him. I don't know. That's a projection based off nothing, but it's a guesstimate. And then early bird contracts must be for at least two seasons, but they can last no longer than four seasons. If a team agrees to a trade that would make a player lose his early bird rights, that player has the power to veto the trade. And I think the most important part is they can use his early bird rights to match an offer sheet. So you have a near guarantee of, assuming the Knicks want to get him to sign this deal, you and Trier decides to sign an offer sheet, you have the opportunity to bring him back at a relatively reasonable salary on the off chance that he turns into a star. Though under that scenario, I think Trier would find a way to get a bigger contract, but that is far into the future. I'm just saying, purely in terms of the numbers, I think this is a deal that makes a lot of sense. Now, if you want to look at this from a big picture perspective, and I want to give a shout out to Knicks Film School here because they were the ones who broke a lot of these numbers down and made this point on Twitter. The Knicks now have Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, Mitchell Robinson, Alonzo Trier, Damian Dotson, and whoever they take in 2019 under team control for not the foreseeable future, but at least the next two, three, four seasons. And that, to me, is really exciting, especially with what we've seen from Ntilikina and Knox the last couple of games, which we're going to get into over the course of the next two segments. But I'm looking at guys that could honestly, like, if your starting lineup is those five guys in 10 years, I mean, odds are that probably two to three of them won't actually end up being starting caliber players, but you just project forward that is like a Knicks lineup in 5 years. Like, that's something I'm intrigued by. That has a lot of qualities I want in a modern NBA offense. You have great defenders at the one and the five in Ntilikina and Robinson. You have a built-in pick and roll combination at the one and the five in Ntilikina and Robinson. Knox is theoretically the centerpiece of that group. Trier is a guy who provides some secondary scoring punch and someone who I honestly think down the road, even on a good team, I generally think his upside is maybe not on a title team, but on like a good playoff team. Like, he could be your third leading scorer, and I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world. And then someone like Dotson, who I think projects to really be potentially, and if not an elite 3-and-D guy, a very, very good one, maybe a notch below that Danny Green tier in his prime, and I think could be an essential piece of a lineup. I guess what I'm trying to say, because obviously you'd want to factor Porzingis into that mix, you'd want to factor some kind of prime free agent into that mix, and you'd want to factor whoever the Knicks take in the top 5 to 6, 7 picks of next season's NBA draft into that mix. I guess the big picture point is the Knicks have a young core locked in a way that I don't think they've had at any point in the last two decades, and a more objective observer than me would probably say none of these guys have proven a thing yet. And that is absolutely true. But, and as my guy Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer always says, it's all about projecting forward. And you see qualities in each one of these guys that could make them an essential player going forward. And I think to me the biggest thing is in each guy there's real basketball substance. Because sometimes you see these players that put up really big stats, like not necessarily their rookie year, but in their first few years in the league. And I look at that guy and I say, all right, he's good at what he does. And I see some utility for him. But is that a guy who I could see being a piece of a championship team in the role that he's most likely to grow into? And I think of someone like Reggie Jackson, like maybe Reggie Jackson as a rookie is averaging 16-5 and you get really excited about that. Or someone like Dennis Smith, who's averaged, I think, like 14 points, 5 assists per game last season as a rookie. And if you were a Mavericks fan or you were a Thunder fan back when Jackson was young, you'd be really into that. You'd be really excited about that. And maybe rightfully so to a point. But I think a lot of that production was empty calories, and you project forward with those guys. You look and you say, all right, what's an average scoring point guard who doesn't really seem as if he's ever going to become an elite scorer? And for every guy like Reggie Jackson, you have a guy like Kemba Walker who does become that elite scorer. But sticking with the Jackson example, you look at one of those guys and you say, what are they going to be going forward? And in my mind, I say, I don't really want that guy going forward, because I see that he can score the basketball. I see that if he's the fulcrum of my offense, I'm going to win 40 to 45 games, even if I have a Blake Griffin level superstar next to him. If he's one of my top two or three players, my team is not in a good position. What I would rather have to those empty calories is guys that I can project forward definitive roles for. Knox, he was extraordinarily inefficient for the majority of the season, but you look at the tools that are there, you look at the size, the shot blocking he showed off last game against the Cavs, the total offensive package, the shooting touch that is slowly coming along. I see a guy who I genuinely believe has all-star upside. And if not that, I see a guy who just has very obvious utility due to his combination of shot making and potential defensive usage. And I see the downside of a guy like that, like some cross between Marcus and Markieff Morris. And now if Knox ends up being that player, I'm inevitably going to be disappointed because I have much higher expectations for him. But that is a guy with obvious utility on a good team. Frank Ntilikina. And this is where I get so frustrated about the people who, and again, I think it mostly wasn't Knicks fans. I think it was mostly just a combination of speculation based off the fact that he was being benched for a long time. But I look at Frank Ntilikina and I project forward. I see a guy who has obvious defensive utility. He was one of the best defensive point guards in the NBA as an 18-year-old. That's a guy who down the road, you look forward, he could make 5, 6, 7 all defensive teams if he gets a significant amount of minutes. And then you look at the shot making he showed off over the last couple of games. You look at the playmaking he showed off at a semi-consistent pace his rookie season. I see someone who could be the starting point guard on a good team. Mitchell Robinson, who didn't have a very good game yesterday. The shot blocking. The rim protection, even when he doesn't block shots. The rebounding. The sliding his feet defensively. The instincts defensively. I see a guy who could be one of the better defensive centers in the NBA. Is he anywhere close to that? No. Does he have that pedigree? You can question it after he fell into the second round last year. But the talent is so obvious. The length and jumping ability are something you watch him against other NBA players and he stands out and he looks like a freak in the best possible way. Alonzo Trier, the scoring instincts. The guy is not afraid of the moment. He hasn't been all season long, despite the fact that he was an undrafted free agent. He never tried to fit in. He tried to stand out from day one. And that's not necessarily surprising to me as someone who's followed his career for quite a long time. What is surprising to me is how efficiently he's been able to do it. And with the extended space in the NBA, a guy who played at the University of Arizona on a team that mostly played two bigs for the majority of his career, suddenly has all this room and he is excelling within it. Damian Dotson, a guy who is somewhat inconsistent but really brings it night in and night out defensively and brings some shooting ability to the table, and a guy whose advanced metrics, along with Nilakina's, to hold off on including Nilakina in that group, but a guy who has consistently been a portion of some of the Knicks' better lineups this season. I see a role player, and I see a pretty good one. I don't want to go too much further down this road because this is getting into a very long first segment, and we'll probably have a shorter third segment because of it, but I just want to finish by saying how impressed I am with Trier this season. Again, an undrafted player. He is seventh amongst rookies in points per game, and he's the only rookie not drafted in the top eight in that group. He's second amongst rookies in three-point percentage. He is fifth in three-point percentage. He's 10th in assists per game. He's 15th in rebounds per game. It really is, when you look at the sum of all of it, he's having a very similar impact on, I would say, kind of a poor man's version, because Kuzma did it on a higher volume, but of a Kyle Kuzma, it's kind of the same story, a guy who stayed 4 years, who got undervalued because of it, but brings some real skill to the table, and in a system that's more conducive for showing off those abilities, he has really thrived. So suffice to say, I think that's a great signing, and I am really happy with what the Knicks have locked up going forward. All right, with that, we will take our first break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Cavs. If you're like me and possess the unfortunate combination of having terrible circulation, having moved to Arizona for 4 years, and then having moved back to New York, by which point your resistance to the cold was relatively non-existent, may I recommend Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. Those are great, by the way, if you haven't tried those out. Really, really love them. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Pretty useful. Perfect for any family member or friend on your holiday gift list. Great for anybody who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts. Ooh, sounds excellent. And long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Action Heat is available for both men and women, and they have great new styles and models just released for this 2018-19 winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm even in the most frigid winter weather, which we are about to get a lot of in New York, so be sure to check out Action Heat. Thanks for joining us back on Locked On Knicks. Once again, I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. Let's talk about a painful loss against the Cleveland Cavaliers, depending on your perspective. I am generally of the opinion that the best thing the Knicks can do this year is lose games in which their young guys look good and have learning moments. Now, that feeling is mitigated slightly by the fact that the lottery odds are obviously different this year, and they disincentivize, I guess, just losing as many games as you possibly can, or at least to a degree, because the odds, obviously, the more games you lose, the odds are still slightly more in your favor in general. I've just been burned so many times over the last couple of years by the Knicks inexplicably winning a few games, and last year it meant that they were out of the race for the guy that I wanted to end up in New York in Luka Doncic. 2 years before, it was the race for Karl-Anthony Towns. that they lost out on, and depending on how the rest of Kristaps Porzingis' career goes, that might end up being a good thing, but at least at the time, I was definitely salty about it. The man the Knicks ended up with this season, Kevin Knox, is the reason they almost won this game after a disastrous first quarter where they were down 39-23 and forced a total of zero turnovers, all while allowing the combination of Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson to just go off. They had a combined 29 points playing 9 minutes and 12 minutes respectively. 9 for Hood, 12 for Clarkson. That is pretty unacceptable. It was in the limited number of Knicks games I have watched this year, that was about as bad as I saw them play. And it could have been expected to a degree. The Knicks started what was essentially their worst defensive lineup, and then with Moutier, Hardaway, Knox, Vonleh, and Kanter, and then they didn't shoot the ball exceptionally well, which is generally you start guys who can't play defense and they don't do well on offense, you're going to be down by a lot, even against a team like the Cavs. And it was a hole that the Knicks couldn't really dig out of until the closing moments of this game. They were down essentially the whole night, and then with about a minute 40 left, Kevin Knox takes over, has the second act of his star turn over the last couple of games. With a minute 40 left, he blocks a Jordan Clarkson jumper, nails a 28-foot three off an assist by Frankie. I was about to call him Frankie Nicotine, but I realize that's controversial these days. Just quick sidebar. I get where it doesn't make sense. I think I appreciate people who want to aspire to a higher nickname. I respect people who don't want Bill Simmons, of all people, nicknaming Frank Ntilikina. I understand that there are better nicknames out there. I like the way Frankie Nicotine sounds. I like hearing it come out of my mouth. If I get castigated for that, so be it. Anyways, Frankie Nicotine sets up Kevin Knox. I think Alex actually hates it too. So I'll get it all out of the way before he comes back, and then it can be our little secret. No one will tell him that I've been using it. Kevin Knox nails a 28-foot three-pointer. They force a miss on the other end. Alex Burks can't hit a four-footer. Knox comes down in transition off a pass from Moutier, goes coast to coast, just a vicious slam, got like 3 feet above the rim. Knicks have their first lead since the beginning of the first quarter, and they go on to lose in a very Knicks-ish way. Ntilikina played what was, I thought, nearly flawless defense on Rodney Hood, and Hood, who is a little bit of a redemption project in Cleveland this year. I've actually been surprised by how well he's playing, certainly surprised by how well he played in this game after literally no one in the league wanted to sign him, and got to the point where he's like, all right, I guess I'm going back to Cleveland. Hit this little push shot over Ntilikina that he defended flawlessly, but was just giving up too much height on the drive. Moutier misses a 14-footer, where you could certainly make the case that he was fouled. I thought it was, I'm sure most people watching were outraged by it, and maybe you have a legitimate case on it. I'm never really quite confident in my ability to gauge what is and isn't a foul, because I feel like it's so subjective from ref to ref. Clearly, Moutier initiated the contact, which is obviously legal to some degree by the letter of the law, probably a foul in that situation, given the fact that Moutier was clearly seeking it out. I didn't blow up that it wasn't called, but you could have called one on Dellavedova. Either way, Moutier, trying to draw the foul, leaves the shot short. Chetty Osman comes back down, gets fouled by Dotson, makes two free throws. Moutier cannot get the ball in. And this was the play that I think will frustrate Knicks fans more than any other. And I think it was Clarence Gaines who pointed out on Twitter that Matthew Dellavedova did really just a flawless job playing the passing lanes. And maybe this is just something that I don't notice all that much, given the fact that the Nets recently lost a number of games because they couldn't inbound the ball in the closing seconds of key moments. I probably should be more familiar with this, but I just thought it was brilliant defense. He was nominally guarding the inbounder, but was constantly sliding his feet to get in the way and play passing lanes. And then that amount of hustle, I think, really interfered with Moutier's ability to inbound the ball. And clearly the play was designed to get it to Hardaway, and Hardaway was essentially held. It wasn't called, as it isn't sometimes in those situations, and so the Knicks turned it over and eventually lost 113-106 in a game that, at least down the stretch, was quite a bit closer than that. But I have buried the lead. This night, like the previous night's game, was all about Kevin Knox and Frank Ntilikina. Knox, 33 minutes, 7 of 15 from the field, 3 of 6 from three-point range, 19 points, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks, including one where he just ended Rodney Hood's life. It was absolutely awesome. And like I was talking about last segment, again, this is the kind of game where you just think, what could Knox be down the road? I love what he does transition. Every time he goes coast to coast, I just get this bump of excitement, giant smile on my face. It is really the most exhilarating play in Knicks basketball right now. His length, his touch around the rim, his coordination pushing it up the court, which even going back to Summer League was the thing that I was most impressed by and the thing that was frankly the most encouraging element of his game to me. And the big question with Knox in my mind, and this is still a question, and it's one that hopefully we get a positive answer to over the next couple of seasons, was I knew he had that transitional athleticism, at least since Summer League. I knew his size would always allow him to get shots off. What I was wondering was, is this a guy who is merely going to be an average shooter, like we talked about last segment, that results in maybe being a Marcus or Markieff Morris? Or is he going to be a good shooter, and at that point he is a very, very good player? Or is he going to be a great shooter, at which point he's a multi-time All-Star? And to me, that's kind of the spectrum that we're looking at with Knox. And the fact that he is starting to shoot the ball well after a season where he was obviously highly inefficient, and it's correlated with something, at least in his mind. I know before the game there was talk on the broadcast of the fact that Knox feels like he's starting to adjust the pace of the NBA, and he's gotten to the point where he can anticipate what defenses are doing nearly instantaneously rather than having to hesitate, figure it out, and at that point the play is gone. And if that comfort level is translating into good shooting, obviously we're going to need to see that over a much larger sample size to confirm it. But what we saw tonight was extremely encouraging, and it made me very happy inside. And what made me even happier was that Frank Ntilikina followed up his great game against Charlotte with another really strong effort after a slow first half. Much like last game, comes on big in his second stint on the court. Finishes with 16 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds. Did have 4 turnovers, which is a negative in only 24 minutes of play. But overall, I just love the shot making I'm seeing from him. And there's been a lot of talk that over the course of this season, we've seen Ntilikina have significantly better form. But instead of translating into better shooting, it's actually translated into worse shooting than in past seasons. And in this game, It all came together, much like last night. He was extremely confident. His shot looked good, and he hit some. He made some big plays down the stretch, both getting into the lane, drawing in defenders, kicking out the ball for threes, or just making the extra pass for an open three, or shooting over defenders. And when he shoots over a guy, it really is almost like, and again, like, apologize, this is sacrilegious for invoking this name, but it is kind of mini Kevin Durant-ish, where guards are right on him, and he's just so long. He sees right over them, and he shoots right over them, and it's almost like they can't really affect, even guards that are right on him, the trajectory of a shot, and that is such a skill, but it's only a relevant one if he becomes a good shooter. And it seems more and more, like with Knox, and again, I'm 100% overreacting to a 2-game sample size, I will 100% continue to acknowledge that. When both these guys have a 10-game stretch where they shoot 30% from the field, I will hit myself in the head repeatedly with a large coconut, but until that time comes, I will say it again. I'm excited about what I'm seeing from these two, and I think it's really, and this is something that Knicks Film School noted in their post-game coverage, it's a more aggressive Frank Ntilikina, and that is something to be extremely excited about going forward. All right, we'll take one more break, we'll come back, and we'll have some quick final notes on Knicks-Cavs next on the Locked On Knicks podcast. Welcome back, third and final segment. Let's go rapid fire, run through the rest of the Knicks lineup. Noah Vonleh, quiet night, 7 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. I thought he was just fine in this game. Didn't really stand out in any particular way. Didn't really get a ton of opportunities. Enes Kanter, a guy who I thought should have been used at a higher volume. 33 minutes, 8 of 12 from the field, 20 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. He was bullying Larry Nance, Channing Frye, whoever Cleveland decided to put on him throughout the game. They didn't really have much of a chance against him. And I think down the stretch, obviously you don't really want too much of your offense to be based out of the post, but I thought Kanter could essentially score whenever he wanted. And the few times he missed, like there was one time where he just blew by, I believe, Nance on like a little reverse, and like even a double team came and it didn't really seem to bother him. And he just rushed it a little and he blew the shot. But I kind of felt like he could get a bucket whenever. So if in your mind the ultimate goal for the Knicks was to win this game, which again I find debatable, they probably should have given it to Cantor a little bit more. You will not hear me complaining that they instead went to Kevin Knox and Frank Ntilikina a whole lot down the stretch. Emmanuel Mudiay, the counting numbers were good, 16 points, 7 assists, 8 rebounds, couple decent stretches of play for him. I thought mostly he was pretty bad. The shooting was bad, obviously the pass at the end was pretty inexcusable, though that's obviously not entirely on him because I really didn't see anyone open. But generally a poor game for him and kind of a regression to what we've seen from him most of his career, where he's capable of putting up these empty counting stats, but they don't really result in anything positive. The one note on him is that he was a +6 on the night, so you can make the case that he had some kind of positive impact, though I would argue that was more a product of his environment than his play. Tim Hardaway, generally atrocious game, continuing a season-long trend of being efficient shooting the three ball, not so efficient from two-point range, 4-for-9 from behind the arc, just 2-for-9 within it. Did have a nice stretch to open the second half, where he had 8 straight points. In the first half, his defense was just atrocious, repeatedly fell asleep off the ball, and just generally didn't seem like he was invested or paying much attention. And it's hard to gauge sometimes, and this is something I know James talks about on the podcast quite a bit. It's difficult for a layman such as myself, and to a lesser degree, James, to determine where defensive errors are coming. You really do have to like look at a play 3 or 4 times, and even then, you're just parsing through these intricacies that you can't know what the scheme is. You don't necessarily know which player was responsible on a miscommunication on a switch, but I think the collective of the Knicks right now is clearly just, especially when you have a lot of young guys on the floor, and maybe you get Lance Thomas back, you have Courtney Lee healthy and in full swing, this shifts a little bit. But all in all, it just, the communication is not quite there, and the Knicks really do blow assignments on an inexcusable level at varying points. And that's normal for a young team, and it's particularly normal for a young team that mostly contributing vets, particularly Hardaway and Cantor, two of the guys who are playing the most minutes at those spots, and you can throw Mudiay and Trey Burke into that mix as well, though it feels wrong to pick on him when he's not even playing. They don't really know what they're doing, and they've never figured it out in their career. A quiet night for Mitchell Robinson, though again, I like what I see from him always. Hezonja, Cornette didn't really do much of anything. Dotson didn't shoot well, had one spectacular defensive possession against Dellavedova, who just ripped the Knicks apart, in addition to Clarkson and Hood in that first second quarter stretch, made like 3 straight threes, had a pretty nifty floater at one point. But there was one possession where Dotson just pressed him full court and really did play lockdown defense on him, and that was good. That was good. He can really guard at certain points, and I'm excited. The more I watch him, I'm really going to start focusing in on Dotson on the defensive end, because that is a genuinely exciting part of the game. When you see a guy like him who just has this innate ability to go over screens and is quick enough laterally to stay with impact guards, which you could argue Matthew Dellavedova doesn't quite fit in that category. I don't know. I thought he had some impressive moments defensively. All right, that'll wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. We appreciate you joining us as always. A programming note, I am going to be at some casinos this weekend, not for fun, unfortunately. I will be broadcasting some Division I college basketball, Princeton, Iona on Saturday, and then Sunday, Drexel taking on Quinnipiac. So if you have a subscription to Flow Sports, I'd love if you join me on either of those two broadcasts. But the implication for most of you who are not fans of mediocre college basketball is that I will not be on the podcast over the weekend. Alex will be getting married, so he has a semi-excusable reason for not being on the podcast. I'll give it to him. So we are probably not going to be back until, I'm going to try and get one out fairly early Monday, because I'm not going to get back from Connecticut until about 1 in the morning, but I will catch up on some Knicks basketball the next day, and at the latest, you should have it Monday night, Tuesday morning, and then, again, we have some exciting guests next week, Tuesday night. We're going to have Jonathan Marchi I gotta really clarify that with him, of Knicks Film School on the podcast. Super excited for that. I mean, to me, those guys are the best in the business. They are really, really good at what they do. If you haven't checked them out yet, again, I highly recommend you check them out. And then after that, we are possibly going to have my friend Lev Akabas on the podcast, who I don't know if a lot of you have heard of, but very talented young sports journalist. Went to Cornell, so he's far smarter than me. Interned for Slam last summer. He's a great guest, and we might have one or two more on next week. I'm going to see who I can get, maybe some names you're more familiar with on top of those two. And then after that, Alex will come back, and things will be as normal. So until then, be well. Remember to check out all the podcasts throughout the Locked On Podcast Network. Peace out.